Welcome back to the 9-8 podcast. My name is David Ellison. Normally, I would have Hoggy with me here from Perth live streaming with me. But today, unfortunately, Hoggy is still off gallivanting about in Europe, seeing a whole bunch of shows and festivals and so on and so forth. So this week, I have some very special guests in the studio. Three members of the Australian prog rock band Genetics who are joining me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 9-8 podcast. My name is David Ellis, and joining me today, I have three members of the Australian prog rock band Genetics. Now, you guys may have remember me mentioning these guys a little while ago in, I believe it was episode one or episode two, when we were talking about Tangled Thoughts of Leaving and Sleep Makes Waves and some of the other sort of more post-rock, post-metal bands that are around. And we were talking about Australian progressive rock guys that are around, and some of the bigger guys, Carnival, Cog, and these guys actually came up, I believe, from my side because I'd just seen them off the back of touring with the Contortionist, which was obviously a great honour for them. So please welcome to their studio, but via Skype. Welcome three of the members of Genetics. Hello, boys. How are you doing?
Good, mate.
How you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. Now, you guys are based in Western Sydney, right? So you guys aren't too far from me. So I'm assuming it's a gorgeous day where you are.
Yeah, it is, actually. We're just talking about the abundance of sunlight that's creeping through under the door here.
That's always a good thing. There's a lot of sunlight coming through my window, which is brilliant, especially to talk about prog and everything to do with it. So, look, I suppose just for the listeners, I've given you guys a little bit of a rap on the podcast before, mostly because I was extremely impressed the first time I saw you guys at Progfest earlier this year, and then running into you guys, obviously, with the Contortionist when you guys played with them. But just for some of the listeners who maybe haven't heard you, a quick elevator ride, 30 seconds. What are you guys about?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. We don't really know. We kind of just do whatever, and that's kind of just become like instrumental prog rock, prog metal. Sam's pretty big on jazz, so there's a big jazz element as well. Mm-hmm. And I guess one thing we can't ignore would be the use of spoken word that we use throughout the music as well.
Yeah, if I had to describe it, it would be like not so much as what we do, but the conceptual nature in which we kind of approach our music. I think that's pretty unique. Like a lot of the stuff that we're doing now, it almost feels like it's like a rock opera in some ways without the singer, because it's very conceptual, it's very thematic, everything's very intentional, and it's more about the experience of the listener at this point than about what we're actually doing technically.
So, I mean, I've seen you guys live and obviously listened to your music quite a bit, and you do use that spoken word going through a lot of your songs. There is a lot of I'm guessing a lot of it is from science, scientists talking about things, and philosophers and so on and so forth.
Yeah, pretty much. That we have the odd comedian thrown in there as well. We've used a sample from George Carlin. And other than that, yeah, pretty much, so, lectures and just, philosophers talking about stuff.
And how do you guys go about the copyright sort of around that? So, I mean, you guys are starting to get more well-known on the circuit now. You've got some gigs coming up and so on and so forth. It seems like clamping down pretty hard on that. Have you had run across any problems with that since you've been releasing music and or playing live?
Oh, really? I think, like, the way we use it is it's pretty composed. Like we're not just taking audio verbatim and throwing it in. Like it's pretty effective or affected on our end. It's pretty cut up, and also like there's a free to use clause, I believe, which is 10% or something before it needs to be I guess cited or need to go seek an additional legal advice. So we're pretty well under that. It's very much for effects in and out. So no, we're very lucky that the songs have been like that. But if it ever gets more speech heavy, then definitely we're going to need to go and seek some more advice on that end.
So you guys got this new album coming out this year, Synosia. It's a full-length LP, I believe. Mm-hmm. Have you guys got the same themes running through this album as well, with, you know, the spoken word and the obviously very genty music accompanying it?
Yeah, we do. But it's is there as much, do you think?
It's much less.
I'd say, yeah, it's probably much less than what we did with on the first album. And we certainly don't want to force it either. So if a song doesn't feel like it needs it, we certainly don't, you know, we don't force it into it.
So you guys, when did you guys form? Take us back to when you started playing together. How'd you guys all meet? You know, was it a speed dating event and you just locked eyes from across the room and went, oh, I'd like to make music with that guy? Or was there something a little bit less less interesting happening?
That is 100% what happened.
I thought so, yes.
It was literally like, you know, like I keep it and Shane's like, want to connect over prog. Yes. Eggplant emoji. It happened, man.
Surprise emoji.
Tinder for progheads.
Splash emoji.
The actual story is Sam and I met at university because we both did a Bachelor of Music degree. And I think it was at the end of our second year. We get about 3 months off at the end of the year. So we just kind of said, look, we're both going to finish our music degrees this coming year. Why don't we get together over the holidays and just do some writing? It was literally never meant to be anything more than just, let's just jam out a couple of songs and call it a day. But yeah, we actually kind of liked what we did. So we continued on with it.
Yeah,
it's interesting, actually, if I could add to that, because it's like, yeah, I guess we're doing this degree and you're doing all, like, it's quite heavy on the literature side. It's not very much on the practical side. And even if it, like, the practice we did do was very confined to, like, what would you say, like,
their method, like their way of doing it.
So we never really had it, to be fair, like, we never really had that, it was never that opportunity to go express ourselves with the music that we liked. So it was like, here's 3 months, nothing's planned. Hey, we're musicians. Why aren't we doing anything? Like, let's do something so we can say, at least when we finish this degree, we can say and show people, hey, look, this is what I can do. And this is like, you know, I play guitar. Instead of having a conversation with, oh, hey, yeah, I play guitar. Oh, yeah, what have you done? And we have, like, nothing to show each other. I think that was the biggest thing for me, is actually having something to my name to say, oh, hey, like, I can prove that I can play. I can prove that I can write music. And it just ended up being much bigger than what we both thought it was going to be.
One of the big questions that we often get, and we've been getting a couple of emails through to the podcast email and so on and so forth, is about promoting gigs and staying relevant with people. So how do you guys go about that? How do you book gigs? Have you got one person in the band that's kind of doing it, or have you guys got a promoter now, or how does that all work?
Well, so it's kind of changed over time. So when we first started, it was literally just, all right, is this going to be a live thing? Okay, yeah, cool. How do we go about getting gigs? And we, like, I don't think any of us have really gone through the process of booking shows or anything like that. So in the early days, like, even though it's, I guess, still technically early days, but, you know, a couple of years ago, all we did was just look at what shows we're playing and just email whoever it was who was booking them. So, you know, we'd sort of trawl through Facebook events and just look at who it was that was booking them, and either send them a message on Facebook or find out their email and just get in contact with them, or even email one of the bands who was playing on the night and just say, hey, look, we're an upcoming band. Here's what we've done. We're looking for shows. If, you know, we're happy to open for you guys if you have us on. So a couple of years ago, that's pretty much how that happened. As you kind of go through and play more and you make more contacts and you meet more people, you know, these things just sort of start coming to you, and that's something that we've,
like, snowballs.
Yeah, it definitely snowballs over time. And I honestly can't remember the last show that we you know, emailed one of the bands playing and asked to play, because nowadays, and it's something that I'm pretty grateful for, like, people come to us and ask us to play, which is
it's phenomenal. Like, yeah, it's crazy, actually. It's like, yeah, because we're not that, we haven't been around that long, so it's pretty cool. If I can also, again, like, it's, if bands, like, you know, just for, like, the budding band trying to start up, I would say yeah, pretty much everything that Shane said is like on a practical level, yes, that's like you have to do that. Otherwise nothing's gonna happen.
Mm.
But also like the mindset stuff is like, you know, start small. Like we played a lot of really crappy gigs in the beginning. You know, playing at the Valve, literally playing to like no people.
Yeah.
But that's like necessary because we got to refine our live sound and like how our technology works, yeah, to use backings. We got to play when our gear failed. Like, you know, you need to be able to do that. Like that's essential. Also the fact, even before that, the fact that we've recorded our album meant that we could send it to people and say, hey, like we can play, we can, like, this is what we sound like, have us on your show, because we've had no experience prior to that as a band. So that's important. And one thing that Shane does really well is like, he's really active in the scene. So like he like, even when we're not playing, when shows have nothing to do with us, like he'll go to shows, he'll meet people, he'll stick around, like he'll flyer. And that's really essential because like that stuff's come back tenfold for opportunities.
Mm.
So it's sort of the old saying, and that is, it's not what you know, it's not who you know, but it's who knows you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's, it seems to be a very similar thing for you guys in the music industry, because, I mean, you guys, looking at your Facebook page, you've got about 1,700 followers.
Right, yeah.
Which is reasonable for, you know, a local band in Sydney, in, yep, a very niche market as well.
We agree, yeah.
So, I mean, you've got more followers than the fan club, the Dream Theater fan club of Australia and New Zealand. So, right. I mean, that's really saying something. Tell me, when you have had those issues where you have had, say, gear fail, as you've mentioned, or you've had, you know, something go massively wrong at a gig, how do you guys handle it? Do you just keep going? Do you have, you know, stuff that you can swap out? Walk us through that process.
Well, I think probably the first major gear fail that we had was due to a friend of ours. So I think it was the second show that we played. A friend of ours actually stood on the power supply that feeds our mixer and splits the signal for our backing tracks. Mm-hmm. So we kind of, yeah, that was a bit shit. but luckily they run a similar setup and they actually use a very similar mixer, which uses the same power supply. So we got pretty lucky with that one, that even though a power supply was snapped, we had a spare one ready to go. In terms of major gear failures during a live show, I don't know if we've had anything that significant. I know I personally haven't. I've tried to put every contingency in place,
yeah,
that would allow at least me personally to play on, and even – like, let's just, because we run in-ear monitors, which play our click tracks to our ears. And even if one of us loses power to them, or if it breaks, or if it stops working or whatever, we've got like a little sign with our drummer, which means, okay, you need to keep time in the gaps now because I don't have click tracks.
Mm.
So we literally try to think as far ahead as possible, try to put every contingency in place that we reasonably can. I don't know if you've had any issues.
Yeah, one time we protested the hero, like, it's actually, it's cool, which is back to my point of, like, you know, play those shitty gigs because they'll let you know what is possible to go wrong and what you don't have to worry about. So it's like, we're lucky in the scene because we kind of know, like, which venues now, we play a little while, which venues have gear that we can use if ours fail, like, you know, cabs or whatnot. But a big one for me was, like, we're playing Purchase the Hero and this massive ring just went out through my whole pedal board. There was like this really bad feedback that was coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought my gear felt like panicked. And I was like, oh, this is crap. Why is this happening now? This has never happened before. And it turned out to be just a faulty lead. So, you know, like, even stuff like that, you know, like just like having spares, everyone knows, like I'm big on everyone knowing like know what everyone has. So like everyone knows that I have leads. If anyone, you know, because of that experience, everyone knows I have leads. Shane and Jay have batteries.
I've got like, I carry three sets of batteries. So I got 12 batteries that I keep. So if Sam's or Jay's in-ear monitors fail, there's literally like sets of organized batteries on my pedal board that any of them can just grab at any one time. So I guess that's kind of the extent of the contingencies that are in place for our live show.
And I mean, that's a very smart way to do it. So you essentially, for want to use of a better term, divvy up some of the essentials between all of you, so that if, you know, the wireless pack fails due to a battery, you can go to one person. If a lead fails, you can go to another person, and you know that those people have those roles and those responsibilities.
Pretty much.
Even actually, I had another one where I think we played in Canberra. And I was putting my in-ears in and they fell on the ground. And I tried to get them and I stood on them. I actually smashed my in-ears just before, like 1 minute before we went on stage. So even like, and lucky, I always carry a spare set of headphones. Like they're just shitty headphones, but I just carry them just in case it happens. So.
Actually, I remember I had a spare in my bag that day too. I carried two sets of headphones as well.
I mean, the only thing we need to carry spares off is a guitar, which is the, you know, the one thing we don't have spares off.
Well, on the bigger shows we've played, I tend to bring I've got 2 7 strings, and we both play 7 strings. On the bigger shows that we've played, like Protest the Hero, I made sure I brought my second guitar just in case. And that offer goes out to anyone we play with as well. Like, I let other bands know if I've got a spare one, which you're more than happy to grab. Just because shit happens, and there's no way to tell if something's going to happen, so we just try to plan ahead as best as possible.
Mm-hmm. I remember 9 years ago, I was playing a gig at the old Harp Hotel, which in Tempe, and my wireless unit failed because I thought I'd be really smart and use wireless for that gig. I don't know why I thought I'd do that.
What's wrong with using wireless, man? you just need a whole bag of batteries, right?
Exactly. And unfortunately, it failed. And I broke a string right before walking on stage, and I didn't have any backups or anything with me. So I was using a borrowed guitar, borrowed leads.
Are you sure this happened, or did you just not want to load in that day and borrow someone's gear?
I wish it were that case. No, it really did happen, unfortunately. And you're right, you learn so much. You learn, you know, hey, make it as simple as you humanly can.
Exactly right.
Which brings me to you guys, your pedal boards that you guys use. Mm. You guys can basically plug in and play anywhere because you use power amps and preamps on your boards themselves, don't you?
That's correct, yeah. Right. So really when we go to a show, all we need is backline, just cabs. And even then, even if we don't, we've got gear that's sufficient to be plugged straight into the desk.
Mm.
Yeah, so we literally try to make it as plug and play as possible.
And is that obviously that's beneficial for touring? Where's the road taking you so far? So you've been to, obviously you've played around the traps in Sydney quite a bit. You've seen Canberra. You've mentioned Canberra.
Yep.
Where else have you been in Sydney? Where's next on the list?
That's a good question. To be fair, apart from the ACT, we actually haven't played interstate yet. So like you said, we played a lot in Sydney. We've also played, not that it's that far, but Wollongong as well as Newcastle a good few times. And the reception in Newcastle was actually really, really good. That was a lot of fun. We love playing there. Three or four times we played.
It's like an outing. Every time we go to Newcastle, like, fuck yeah, Newcastle. We just crash there and it's just awesome. We just get drunk, play.
we play and then get drunk.
I may have switched that in my experience.
You may have swapped the order around.
You just do the old Axl Rose and just get hammered before you walk onto stage, walk on stage 9 hours late and chuck a tantrum.
On stage.
Go full Axl Rose.
Full Axl Rose.
Actually, we're going to totally commit to that. Sinoja's not coming out till 2040. So
Chinese Sinoja.
And when it comes out, there'll be a whole bunch of lineup changes, and it won't be anywhere near as good as it should have been.
I'm working on my first lineup change now. Sam, you're gone, mate.
Your smelt's coming.
So on that note, if there's any listeners out there who want these guys to play in Melbourne or in Brisbane or Perth or what have you, hit these guys up. I can personally vouch for them in their live show. It is very, very good.
I mean, Melbourne and Brisbane are definitely the two that we're working on getting down and up to now. Mm-hmm. Nothing's locked in yet, but that's definitely our focus for this year. We want to hit up those two cities by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's an easy thing to do, but we're all pretty time poor at the moment. Mm-hmm. So that's why the album's taken a little bit longer than it should have, as well as, you know, heading down to Melbourne as well. Like I've been to Melbourne a couple of times, but not to play, and it's definitely something that I think would be good for us.
So what is sucking up your time at the moment apart from music? I'm assuming you guys have all got day jobs and you juggle, the life of a musician and your day job. How do you do that?
Full time prog nerds, man. We just prog all day. That's what prog pays the bills, as they say. I hope they say that.
They'd be shocked.
Can I pay an odd time signatures? Is that all right?
Hey, Mr. Landlord, here's my 7/8. It's rent. Time wise, man, it's like all of us. I mean, this year's been particularly full on. Like I know Shane just started working like a lot
full time.
Year.
Yeah, because I just finally finished studying, so I've finally been qualified and work full time now. So definitely have much less time than I used to. Just for everyone, it's been ridiculous.
Well, Luke just got married and went on a honeymoon, so that's recently a drummer. Jay is just being Jay, so that's fine.
Jay's pretty busy.
He actually is very busy. He works. He's a sign maker, so he works sometimes weekends. Hey,
that's just a good point, doesn't he?
Yeah, quite busy. I just finished one job, started a new job this year. So it's crazy, man. Like we're under no illusions that we have things that we need to take care of outside of the band, and we're trying to juggle all those things properly, because let's be honest, let's be fair, if you can't pay your bills and you can't eat, you're not gonna make music. Mm-hmm. So that's sometimes that needs to take priority over doing the music stuff. But when we do get together, like we're very religious about our practice, so we practice every single week unless something come up, and so that's the one thing that we structure that in, so we make sure that we can get our we keep rehearsing the material, keep feeding our creativity, and just checking in with each other all the time.
So you guys check in with each other and say, for example, mental health, things like that. You guys just lean on each other a bit. If someone's had a crappy day, with a lot of that sort of stuff, and it is a touchy subject because it is obviously so close to a lot of people around the world. But you guys have built yourselves a network within that band to lean on each other, or... what do you mean by checking in with each other?
Well, I mean, for us, because we've been playing together, I was in a band with Luke much well before Genetics. So actually when Genetics formed, it was, I was hanging out with Shane doing uni, and then I was playing in another band. And then Genetics came about, and then Luke left that other band with, as well as myself, and we formed Genetics, and he brought in Jay. So all of us we've known each other, I guess, with varying degrees, much longer than the band's been together, kind of thing. So we've and it's never that dramatic. So I think we're always chatting with each other. We always keep each other, everyone knows what's coming up. If someone's having a hard time, I personally think that I can tell the band what's going on, and everyone's very understanding. So we never let it get dramatic to the point where it's like, oh my God, my life's in crisis. I think we all let each other know well before. And not a lot of people are that lucky to have people around, especially in their band, where they can do that.
Yeah. I think it's very important to have those sorts of relationships within whether it be a friendship group or a band, or particularly in high stress environments where, if you are playing big shows. And speaking of big shows, the first time I had the pleasure of viewing you guys, as I mentioned earlier, was at Progfest this year.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how was your experience there? Because for the punter, and I just went as someone that wanted to go this year. It was phenomenal from our end. I can only imagine for yourself rubbing shoulders with some of the bands that were there. Obviously, Meniscus is one that comes to mind because they're somewhat similar to you guys. But obviously, Leprous, who headlined, and Voyager, and Osaka Punch, Awesome Wells, all those guys.
Yeah.
How was it for you guys? How was that experience?
Well, that was, it was a lot of fun. Progfest is something I've been going to for years now, I think. I think the first Progfest I went to was maybe 2012, maybe 2013. So it was good to finally be a part of it. As for rubbing shoulders with all those bands, like I said, we're all pretty active in the scene, and we're kind of all friends with them anyway. Apart from Leprous, obviously, because they're much more bigger international band. But you mentioned Osaka Punch and Meniscus. So we went to university with the drummer from Meniscus.
Right.
Even Awesome Wells.
Awesome Wells, yeah, played a show with them.
Awesome. And, like, honestly, I mean, like, those guys, it's like seeing old friends. It's really cool because we played with them before. Even the week before Progfest, we played with Osaka Punch and...
That's right, yeah.
And Awesome Wells, and it was awesome. We just got to hang out and chat, and it's awesome. Osaka Punch is a band, even Awesome Wells, they're much bigger than us, and they have a much bigger reach, and they've been doing it for a bit longer.
Yeah.
And just talking about the scene, and, like, you know, they have the same struggles that we do. You know, they have the same issues that we do, and it's awesome just to get that reality check to go, hey, you know what, like, you know, don't feel sorry for yourself. This happens to all of it, like, every band. Just keep pushing through. So, yeah, it's good. Everyone in the prog scene has been very warm and welcoming and supportive.
And I guess it's, like, it's not a huge scene. Like, it's big enough, but it's not too big that you're not still – what's the saying, like 1 degree of separation or two, whatever it is?
Oh, 6 degrees.
Yeah. But like in the prog scene, it's everyone knows everyone at least through like a mutual friend. Yeah. So, it's good. It was a great show, but it's also kind of like just hanging out with old friends, as Sam said, because everyone kind of knows each other anyway.
You mentioned experiences, and other bands are going through sort of the same struggles as you guys are. What are some of those struggles that you guys are going through, particularly in, obviously, in Sydney, being a city with these wonderful lockout laws that we've got, which seem to be strangling the live music scene, and obviously prog being even more so?
Yeah, some of the I don't know, man. It's everything you would expect, and then it's also like for me it's mindset as well, you know, because like with anything you're doing, one thing I guess I want to turn this into a lesson thing, because at the end of the day everyone has their own unique experiences, obviously, and they have different backgrounds, they're gonna have different challenges, but for me what's been a constant is that, you know, like things are going to take longer than you expect. You want to get them good. Two, you have to like, you always have to try and learn from like those experiences. Like even your successes are kind of hard, because it's like you want to be on cloud nine, but you're going to have to like, you know, deconstruct and be like, what did we do good? What did we do bad?
Yeah.
What opportunities didn't we take? And also three is actually, as funny as it sounds, it's actually learning what to say no to, because we've had a lot of opportunities come our way, and then we've had to literally say no to some because we need to put our time and energy, which is now quite precious, into things that may not be lucrative but are going to push the band forward in the long run. And that brings its own challenges as well. But, you know, those three things for me have been, you know, what's helped us kind of, I guess, keep going forward.
Do you guys find it a struggle around Sydney to – I mean, you guys are obviously getting gigs now organically. People are approaching you.
Yeah.
Do you find – this is something we touched on a couple of episodes ago.
Right.
There's a lot of really small venues. So there's, for example, in Sydney, there's Valve Bar, there's Frankie's, which is almost impossible to get into. And there's a couple of others sort of around. And then there's nothing in that next – grid up, and then after that you've got the Metro and, you know, Factory Theatre and so on and so forth. There isn't really anywhere in that next echelon. So a lot of bands, for example, Pliny, who you guys probably know, and the Helix Nebula and lots of those guys, have actually had more success overseas than they have here.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they come back and everyone goes, oh, these guys are from Australia, isn't it great? The same thing happened with Rush from Canada when they went massive in the States, and then everyone said, oh, they're a Canadian band, but no one wanted to know them before that. You know, just sort
of... I want to know the tipping point, right?
Like, yeah. so what is the tipping point?
What do you reckon? It's so many different actions.
Well, it's definitely true that it's harder to get those bigger shows because, like in the early days, we just emailed the smaller shows, and I think in our second year of being a band, or just after we'd been a band for a year, we pretty much played on average once every 2 weeks.
Well, last year the second year was like precious to hear it.
Like I remember averaging it out because I remember Jay made like a big, he made like a little poster design thing that played that, showed every show that we played that year. And it was like 20 something shows, and over a year it averaged out to be one every 2 weeks. So we're definitely, it's easy to get those smaller shows, but as much as we love playing, and we do, even the smaller shows, like we got to think about how to push forward. So it's there definitely is a line where it becomes more difficult to get into that higher tier.
Yeah, it's like there is that buffer period. Like back to like I guess saying no. Like I guess that's a good example of saying no. Like we actually I remember us going through a stage where we like, listen, like we've got a bunch of shows we can play well, but okay, let's not play for the next 2 months. Because we really need to get into the practice room and sort out our technology. Like we want to make, like there's one stage where we have to make our backing, we wanted to like just really make our backings awesome. And we had to like literally fix up our click track so it was a better experience for the audience. So we said we didn't play any shows and that helped because, like it doesn't help straight away, but now people come to the shows and they have a better experience and there's more word of mouth. And there's so many times that, it blows all of us away when we get to shows and it's like, oh, hey, I'll say, oh, hey, my name's Sam, or Shane will be like, hi, my name's Shane. They're like, oh, the genetics guys. We've never met these people, and that's crazy for us. Like that blows us away all the time.
It never gets old, that.
please keep saying that to us. So tackling the big things, right, that even though they might not have any, I guess, any financial ROI or like anything. So the big things is like for us, it's the live performance. That's like, that's a personification off ourselves, off the collective. So that needs to be, for us, that's been priority. And that definitely has ripple effects, like, across everything.
And obviously getting out there as well, just going to gigs, being seen, which you've touched on before, is obviously quite a big helper as well, I suppose.
Well, for me, I just thought that was normal because I'm 27 now and I've been going to gigs since I was 15. The first show I went to was actually Dark Tranquillity in 2005.
All right, yeah.
At Manning Bar, no less. Yes. So playing with the Contortionist last month or like a month and a half ago at Manning Bar, for me personally, that was really, really cool because for me, that's where my gig going, quote unquote, sort of started. So that was really, really cool. But for me, I just thought that was normal, like being an active member of the scene, getting to know as many people as possible, just by virtue of going to so many shows over the years, it's inevitable that you'll just see familiar faces and you'll make friends and all that sort of stuff.
But also, like, to that point, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's normal, but you don't really see it that much, do you? Like, I guess a lot of bands that I see that are, like, fantastic, like, they're awesome bands, some of them aren't really active in the scene that much. Mm-hmm. As in, like, they don't go and just watch their friends' bands. They don't, like, they don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just stuff like that. Like, it's common sense stuff. It takes a lot of effort, but, like, the payback is huge.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And given that we live out west, like, there's no shows out west, man. Like, you got to go into the city or at least in the inner west, like, sort of Newtown, Marrickville area, to go to shows. So it's a lot of effort. Especially for someone who's out Liverpool way. I don't know if that means anything for some of your listeners who probably don't know the geography of Sydney, but yeah.
we were talking about that the other day, actually, Hoggy and myself, and we were having to put it into context for people, say, in the States or in Europe. For those of you listening in Europe or in the States, Sydney is roughly the size of which we've said before, Sydney is roughly the size of Liechtenstein, the country, the small country. So it would be like sort of going from one end of Liechtenstein to sort of about three quarters away across Liechtenstein just to see a concert, which
pretty much
sort of blows some people's minds, but you've got to deal with Sydney traffic, which is...
Oh, man.
Don't get me started. But hang on, if you don't want to deal with the traffic, you could just catch a train. Oh, wait a second.
Oh, wait a minute. They stopped working at like...
11:30 p.m.
Yeah. So this is, I think this is another thing, just going back to, the problems with the Sydney and the problem with the music scene here in Sydney. Yeah. Melbourne and Brisbane seem to have a very flourishing music scene. A lot of prog bands coming from Brisbane. A lot of really good prog bands coming from Brisbane, by the way.
Yeah, well, you mentioned a Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Seahorse.
Yeah.
Caligula's Horse. And then you've also got, the Butterfly Effect. It is interesting that there's not a lot of really strong bands that are coming out of Sydney, with not in the prog scene anyway. A lot of the prog scene seems to be coming out of either Perth or Brisbane, and there's obviously a lot of really great bands coming out of Melbourne. Is that, do you think, because it is preventative almost for people to go and see shows, especially if they live out west or, even I'm in the Lower North Shore in Sydney in Cremorne, which you guys were here the other night when you were going to the Orpheum.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was me.
It's just literally around the corner from me.
Yeah.
To get into the city for me is a bus ride
that's
20 minutes into the city or something like that, and I can literally see it from here. And it's just, and getting home after 11 o'clock, it's useless. It's near impossible.
Right, yeah.
So I can only imagine it'd be even worse for you guys or any fans of your band who's out there. So I suppose is your fan base mostly where you guys are, or is it mostly in the city due to what we were just talking about?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I imagine they'd be in the city, but I haven't looked at the metrics personally. I don't know where they're from.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like, we do see some familiar faces, and they're mostly based in the people who are based in the city. So I would have to say, yeah, the city, because,
or at least Newtown area.
Yeah, just because, like, I mean, Luke and Jay, like half the band, they're from the city where, and like all our shows that we play are in the city. All the gigs we attend are in the city. So yeah, I'd say that's where the scene is thriving.
Mm.
Mm. And do you think this is something that we touched on in the very first episode, Hoggy and myself? Do you think prog's making a comeback?
It was last year or the year before. I think Pliny's a big deal, like, for what he did to instrumental prog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially he's shone a spotlight on Australia instrumental prog and said, hey, listen, we have something to offer here. And so when he came out, it was a big deal, because it was like, whoa, this is a thing. We can do this in Australia.
Mm. Is it making a comeback, or did it ever really go anywhere? I don't know. To me personally, it just seems like it sort of hasn't gone up. Like, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't gone up, hasn't gone down. It's just sort of always been there. And it's a very sort of niche sort of community where it's thriving in and of itself, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Subculture that just keeps existing.
Well, yeah, it's hard to explain.
What do you reckon, Dave? Because I'm like, honestly, I'm not sure. Like, we're so close to it. Like, because all we do in the band is prog, go to prog shows, play prog shows, listen to prog music.
That's a good point. We're also we're in it, so it's
not
hard.
Not objectively.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I mean, Hoggy and myself are quite actively involved as well with, you know, the fan club and a whole bunch of other stuff. We've been listening to prog for years. But I'm a bit on the fence as well. I sort of sit there and go, well, did it ever really go anywhere? I mean, you had a couple of really big bands. You had obviously Pink Floyd and Rush, Genesis, you know, and then later on you had Tool and Dream Theater to an extent. But even they're quite underground. The average punter probably don't know who they are. So I don't know. I don't know if it ever really went anywhere for it to make a comeback, or whether or not we are just seeing Spotify and, you know, all the streaming services and the ready access and the extremely easy access to new music, new stuff. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's a YouTube series where you've got people who are hip hop heads and they react to different types of music.
It's so good. They've done like Near Blue Viscaris.
Yep.
It's really awesome to watch them listen to. Like, I love the ones where they're doing like Megadeth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good, because they're like, because it made me realize again, like, man, these guys were awesome players, because they're like reacting to it, and then I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, I remember when I heard that song.
I think it's interesting as well to see how, I mean, if you go back 5 or 6 years, people who said, you know, you'd ask people if you meet them, so what sort of music are you into, you know, and they go, oh, I listen to everything. And when I was working at, I used to work at a large electronics retailer here, which may or may not have a logo that's yellow and black.
Gotcha.
They're not sponsors, so I'm not going to give them any bloody airtime.
I think that was Chandler's, wasn't it?
That was it. Yeah. Electrics World. People used to come up to me, you know, to try out the Bluetooth speakers or what have you, and we'd say, oh, I'd say, you know, any particular type of music. Oh man, I listen to everything. It's like, cool, Swedish thrash metal it is. Oh no, like, you know, top 40 is what they meant.
Scandinavian progressive vegan core for you.
nowadays. I think, honestly, if you do say, I listen to everything, I think people's tastes are quite more varied than perhaps they were 5 years ago.
100%, man. Yeah, there's actually a study that Spotify did, and it's because of the easy access of music that people are getting. And because they now that there's no like cost barrier to go and explore, it's like literally at your fingertips. I think mainstream music, like what's in the top 40, is actually losing a lot of audience because people are now finding stuff, they're discovering stuff, and I don't know. We can all, I guess, attest to that sense of wonderment that we I don't know, we all felt when we first heard like an awesome Dream Theater epic. And so imagine people just discovering all this music they never thought existed, you know. Mm. So yeah, definitely. People's tastes are very much varied these days. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose off the back of that, maybe prog is making a bit of a comeback. Maybe it's less of a comeback and more of a leveling off of everything else.
I think prog's got an opportunity right now because you don't have to go to some weird record store and place an order for an album that you know, like an obscure album. Yeah. You can literally go and listen to it. So it's definitely an opportunity. I think back to Pliny, like he definitely. Like, show anyone who's not into prog like a really awesome Pliny song and they'll get it. Prog being able to present itself in a more accessible way is also like a thing. I'm not saying people should, you know, cop out, like play what you want to play, but it's definitely a factor. Like, just watch what Pliny's doing. Like, he's opening up prog for everyone to be like, here you go. I can make good music and it can be complex and you can still like it.
Mm. And I think that is one thing with prog that it does have. Obviously, in the community, we all love it. We love the fact that it's musicians' music. You know what I mean? And it is a little bit. You don't necessarily have to have a degree to understand what's going on, but you do to really sort of pull it apart and things like that, which is what a lot of prog heads like to do because we're all nerds. we enjoy sort of, you know, the odd time signatures and, you know, odd meters and polyrhythms and all that sort of stuff, which makes it a little bit inaccessible for some people to get into.
Yeah.
Also, on that note, you do have the more extreme versions of it, and I'm going to put Animals as Leaders in to the more extreme areas of it just because of KAFO, which is a head rock. And they're one of your big influences. Who are the other guys that you guys really look up to?
Oh, man, that's yeah. That's not an easy one to answer because...
Funny, that's a tough one, isn't it?
It really is because even if we told you like some of our favorite bands, some you'd probably be able to call. You'd be able to think, oh yeah, that makes sense. But others you probably wouldn't because for me personally, most of the bands I listen to sound nothing like the music we produce. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, like you mentioned Animals as Leaders. I'm a big Animals as Leaders fan. But most of what I listen to, honestly, at the moment is like 90s death metal. Bands like Death, that's like pretty much my second favorite band in the world.
Mm-hmm. They've dropped a degree, mate.
Sorry? Dropped a degree. Death used to be my favorite band for like a good 10 years until another band came along.
Mm-hmm. A sidetrack. So playing with the Contortionist was actually like a massive deal because... Shane's listened to that album straight. Like when I say straight, like that's the only album I've listened to for probably two years.
Language.
Yeah, Language. Like 2 years straight. Like that was, and that really, I would say that really influenced the music we made on Cogdis, and some of Snosha actually, because we've pulled that album apart. You know, like listened to every inch of that album.
Mm-hmm.
You got to say the Contortionist, man. That's a big influence.
Yeah, for me personally, the Contortionist would be. I mean, not only my favorite band, but definitely a massive influence, just not even in terms of the music, not even in musical terms, but just in terms of their approach, their ethos, I guess. Like, because every album they've done has just been completely different. And I kind of see that in us as well. But at the same time, just the way we approach music writing, I think, is very similar in the way that they have. In that it doesn't matter what we've done before, or it doesn't matter what anyone's expecting. Let's just write the music we want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how obvious it'll be to anyone who listens to the new album when it comes out, but Sam wrote his songs and I wrote my songs completely separately, but they still, they definitely still work together, but you'll hear that they're completely different. So I guess in terms of influence, like the Contortionist would be one of them for many reasons. But yeah, like I said, man, like, For us, we all listen to all sorts of different music. And for me, I've just been on a massive death metal binge lately and sounds nothing like the music we produce.
And do you guys find there's a common theme running through the stuff that you guys all enjoy. So I'll give you an example. There's a band that I actually used to play with, and it was actually a bit difficult because I was a massive prog head and no one else in the band had any interest in prog music.
Right. I've been in a band like that.
Which was really hard because all the other guys were rockheads, right. And you know, Metallica, Ruse, all that sort of stuff.
They totally do though.
they were very rock guys. Me being a prog head, it just didn't wind up working. There were too many creative differences, I suppose. So, is there a common theme between what you guys listen to and what you guys actually sort of enjoy? It doesn't necessarily have to be exactly everything, but I assume there isn't someone in the band who's listening to, say, Taylor Swift, and everyone else is listening to Death or The Contortionist. So,
I guess prog metal. Everyone kind of likes that.
We all know what we signed up for, right? We signed up to be in a prog band.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everyone, the overarching, principles and ethos are there. It's like, you know, this is going to be progressive music. It's not going to be, you know, your four chord song. Some parts are going to be complex. Being prog nerds, I mean, like, I think I haven't been listening to a lot of heavy music for the past couple months. I've been listening to heaps of jazz, and trying to, deconstruct that. It's been good. It hasn't been like a big like obstacle in the band. It's more like, oh crap, how do we now interpret this as genetics? You know, like, so it's all been good, man. I think we're really, really open to challenges, like musical challenges especially, because I think we're all focused on being better players, better songwriters and musicians.
So I mean, like, you asked for what the common theme is. I guess the common theme literally is progressiveness. Like as cheesy as it might sound,
that's
like.
True.
It's true that, I mean, the word progress means to keep changing. So, like, that's literally the common theme. Like, all of us listen to everything and we're all open to everything and adding whatever influences just occur. Like, there's that would be the common theme, I guess. As much of a non-answer as that might be.
No, it's fine. I mean, what's the most left-of-field thing you guys listen to?
That's a good question.
I fucking love Sun-O, man.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's good. I've been trying to get into some Indian classical music, like Indian ragas, like stuff on like with drone.
Mm-hmm.
Some Sun-O is really cool. Some is just like, oh, this is annoying. but mostly, I think left of field, I'm trying to get into some like weird, like experimental, almost psychedelic kind of music, just so I can be like, okay, so what's this experience? How can we create this for the listener without LSD, really? that for me, that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Left of field, I can't really think of anything. What would be center for you? So if what because left of field to me might be right on track, you know what I mean? So
it's obviously very personal. I mean, center for me is what you normally listen to, what your go-to is. So from my perspective, I actually listen to, obviously I listen to a lot of prog, but left of field for me would be stuff like, I'm a massive dance music head as well, so you know, beyond trance, all that kind of stuff. I mentioned Taylor Swift, John Fogerty, and the Eagles. I grew up on all that sort of stuff. Oh, so,
I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan too.
I
love like the songwriting. I love James Taylor, like so all that like John Denver, like all that old school country stuff. The songwriting is phenomenal.
So I guess it's like for me personally, it's weird because I try to be as open as possible, so I don't really think of anything as being strange. Like I'm just looking through my Spotify. Library now, and like you mentioned Above and Beyond, I think what's the name of the album? I haven't listened to it. Group Therapy.
Yes,
one of the greatest dance albums ever made.
Yes.
And honestly, I think and other dance music just doesn't do it for me like they do. Like they've got a way of just making the most satisfying progressions and melodies that I don't think anyone else is doing, and it seems almost like an untapped market. I would love to hear someone mash up Above and Beyond with more like progressive elements. Like it doesn't always need to be 4/4. I would love to hear a prog dance band, and I'm going to go ahead and do that before anyone else takes my idea. So because progressive trance exists, but to me it's not progressive. It's it means something else to them. So stop using the word. But
Lithia is doing something really awesome in that space. Probably what you're thinking, but they've literally, it's like prog, instrumental prog with like massive dance elements, and I think they're doing stuff that is awesome. If you want to check them out, their latest album, Most Hated, is so good.
Is that Polyphia?
Polyphia.
Oh yeah, Polyphia. Yeah, they're awesome.
Check out their latest stuff. I think I listen to it and I'm like, I can't believe no one, like, I haven't heard any like this done before, and it seems obvious that someone's doing this.
No, they are extremely good. And they sort of came out of nowhere. There's actually been a few artists that just came out of absolutely nowhere. You had, you know, Polyphia, you had Sarah Longfield, Rob Chapman, all these guys that are sort of getting big-ish on YouTube, and then suddenly they're just there and they're across Facebook feeds, and you know,
they've been doing it for years though. Years and years and years.
Yeah, absolutely. And this sort of goes back to what we were saying earlier, where it's a bit of a grind in the beginning, but it will pay off.
Actually, back to, you've given me an idea of like some odd stuff I listen to. I love Kate Bush. I'm not sure if you're a fan. Kate Bush, she's like pop prog before, like, so like her audience was like pop heads and she was like playing prog, like angular stuff. That's awesome. I'm big into neo soul as well, so like old D'Angelo, big fan of Hiatus Carity, Australian band. It's a bit all over the shop actually.
But I think that's what separates people, obviously, who are musicians, who will just listen to anything, and people who say they listen to anything, but they've always got sort of a niche that they gravy on. That's a different thing. So I suppose this is probably a good time to bring it up. One thing we do like to do on this podcast is we recommend an album to each other, Hoggy and myself. Yep. Well, there's something we listen to during the week that maybe caught our attention. It can be a new album. It can be something that we've been listening to for some time that maybe the other person hasn't heard. So I'd like to actually recommend one to you guys. And if you want, you can recommend one back. Don't have to being guests on the program. But it's one that I listened to. It actually came out this week. A group called Sunchild. Sunchild. Yeah, they're prog rock, so they're not prog metal or anything like that.
That's fine.
The album is called Messages from Afar, The Division and Illusion of Time.
Gotcha. Spotifying it right now, mate.
It is brilliant. It's really, really good. So I'd love to hear what you guys think about that. Have you guys got one for me? I probably caught you on the hop.
I don't know. Let me think about it. Have you got anything, Sam?
Yeah, for sure. Depends. Like, I've got a couple. Like, honestly, they're not new. Like, I haven't listened to anything new, so thank you for that recommendation.
That's right.
Listen to Rumours by Fleetwood Mac. Like, phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go back, listen to Rumours. It's insane. Insanely good. Lyricism, writing, all of it.
You know what? I haven't done that for some time, so I think that's probably a good thing to do.
Yeah. That's cool, man. We'll definitely check out that album. I'm keen to listen to it because my hand's been off the trigger with the new releases for a little while.
There's actually a really good website that's got all the prog releases that are coming up this year. And you can, I'm pretty sure you can just Google progressive rock releases and it comes up. It's some like blogspot thing. So it's really, really cool to keep your just fingers on the pulse if you want to listen to some new stuff that maybe is a bit left of field or right of field or whatever, and stay off the charts. So it's always good.
For me personally, if you haven't, for anyone who's inclined to listen to anything like old school and pretty heavy, Death's Human is probably my probably second favorite album of all time. I'd recommend anyone listen to that if they haven't. But honestly, I really can't recommend any other album other than The Contortionist's Language. That for me is just ticks every box. It came out exactly when it needed. Like, I heard it exactly when I needed to. But I imagine most of your listeners would have heard it. So
look, potentially,
a lot of people like exoplanet, and it was hard for them to get into language.
That's a good point.
So maybe even exoplanet's great.
What's the standout track for you on language? I mean, I know as progheads, we like to listen to the whole thing.
He's wincing. You're making him choose between.
Don't make me pick. It'd be Language Part One,
mm-hmm.
or Thrive,
mm-hmm.
or The Parable.
The Parable. Okay, I'm just going to take a few seconds here. I'm just going to play 30 seconds of The Parable.
Sure. Now,
just for
a long
listeners.
Intro. That's
just for the listeners, so they can hear a little bit about what we're talking about. So this is The Parable by The Contortionist. What was it about that album? You mentioned you heard it at just the right time. So did you have something going on at the time and you needed a bit of a sort of a pep up and it just clicked with you? Or what was it specifically about that album that really spoke to you?
I don't know. It's not that anything specifically was happening. It's just that I like my tastes in music have, you know, they change obviously with time. And there's been a few albums that just really ticked all the boxes that I wanted ticked at that time. And in 2014, that just came out, and that happened to be the one that did it for me. And that's not to say I liked it straight off the bat. It actually took like three listens before any of that album clicked with me, because I heard some reviews about it as it came out. And yeah, I didn't really see what was so good about it at the time, but I listened through maybe
you bigot.
maybe on the third time, and it finally clicked, and I got it. And like Sam said, the CD did not leave my car for a good 2 years.
Like, that's not even an exaggeration.
It's
like,
not
literally,
an exaggeration.
Like, we were playing, trying to pick me up to go to shows or uni or whatever, and like that was playing all the time. So actually, like, I tell the story because I didn't actually like the album that much at all, but I listened to it like by coercion. Like,
and you heard it under duress.
It grew on me like a tumor, literally, because like I didn't, honestly, I can't tell you the time I spent by myself listening to the album besides being in Trent's car and just it growing on me.
But there's been a few albums for me that did that, like that just happened to be the one at the time. There's an Aussie band, I'm sure you would have seen them, we've played quite a few shows together, called Hemina.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good, they become really good friends of ours.
That's a good story. Sorry, if you'll indulge us.
Yeah, absolutely.
We actually, again, like how we got off in the scene, hopefully people listen to this can take this, you know, as a gold nugget. They actually gave us our first opportunity in the scene. Like, we wouldn't actually be where we were without them. And that's not to say they didn't just stop there. Like, they've just been awesome friends. They've recommended us for shows that we wouldn't have got otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Doug, he's been such a good, like, a good friend. He's helped us, you know, with like mixing advice, mastering advice, production, keep like just letting us know anything that he can help with, he'll help us with. And like, honestly, we would not be here without the generosity of those guys. So they're a big part of, you know, how we got to where we are.
And they're just all around mad cunts too. So,
so all right, I've got to do the thing. Just for 4 seconds, is for the fan club. Favorite Dream Theater album?
Awake.
Oh man, that's tough. Okay, so
it's Awake. Just shut up. It's Awake.
That is a very, very good album. For me, shit, man, that's a hard one for me. I do like 6 Degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I love 6 Degrees. I love Train of Thought. I love, honestly, but the top one has to be Scenes from a Memory for me.
That's
fine. Just because of the story, I don't know. I'm a sucker for stories, and like that album, just once you start, you don't want to stop that album.
Mm. Don't get me wrong, I'm a sucker for concept albums too, but for me, it's got to be Awake. Like, I mean, it's hard because the first Dream Theater song I ever heard was Erotomania.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 11. I had no idea what I was hearing.
Mm.
So for me, Awake's always been my first sort of introduction
Gotcha.
into Dream Theater. And funnily enough, the second Dream Theater song I heard was Dance of Eternity. So when I finally actually heard James LaBrie sing, I thought, is this the same band? Because I'd heard two instrumental songs.
Yeah.
Just two out there ridiculous instrumental songs in a row.
I always love seeing LaBrie, like, you know, he, like, when he sings, there's like a long instrumental section, he just pisses off stage.
Yeah.
He just leaves. Like, I think it's so funny.
There's
obviously gonna do a shit. I'll be back. Yeah, actually, you know, probably the moment that got me really into the band was when I watched the live DVD score.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I just thought that was amazing. That's probably my favorite Dream Theater concert because not only is this like, you know, the second half, the whole orchestra comes out. Mm-hmm. I think that's just phenomenal, right? Like, holy smokes! But yeah, just all the songs that I love just live, that they just sound amazing on that album. LaBrie sounds amazing, Petrucci, Bono, all of them sound incredible.
Yeah, it was a pretty phenomenal album. And of course they do 6 Degrees cover to cover.
Yeah, dude. They do.
Which is, and they do Octavarium almost every song off Octavarium as well. Yeah, and you know what's really interesting is I actually prefer the way Petrucci ends Octavarium on that than in the album. Because in the album he holds that final note of the solo, whereas in this he goes down to the A sharp add 5, which is a much nicer, fuller way to end it, in my opinion. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I've had many arguments with people about that.
It's the point of contention.
Oh, absolutely. And this is one of the things with the Dream Theater fan club is that people are very specific about what they like.
Right. they've got their minds made up.
Yes.
Well, to be fair, I'm definitely one of those when it comes to my favorite album or what the best Dream Theater album is. Like, for me, there's no other answer than Awake.
Don't lie, mate. You like Demon Day Unite, you piece of shit.
Oh, that's it. That's exactly it.
Fingers crossed when he said Awake.
For me, one of my favorites, and this is a bit contentious in the community, is Falling Into Infinity. A lot of people hate that album, and I can't see why.
Oh, okay.
Because every song that's on it, I mean, if you go through the list of songs.
Yeah, that's good. That's with Derek Sherinian, right?
Yep.
Dude, sorry to interrupt, but I know the story of that album was the producers got involved and said, hey, we need you guys to write something that's a bit more radio friendly, right?
Basically,
what they came up with was amazing. Like, it's really good prog and I guess pop, if you want to call it that. Good bridge between them. Yeah.
But if you look at the track list that's actually on there, I can't pick, there's not a bad song on there.
Man, Hell's Kitchen is like one of my favorite Dream Theater instrumentals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so good.
And Lines in the Sand is one of my top five Dream Theater songs.
I'll tell you what, actually, that album, so that song particularly, Lines in the Sand, opened me up to King's X, which is a whole nother thing. That's another amazing band. So, no, you're right. That's a good album. I do like that.
Mm. But obviously, I mean, Octavarium is superior to all the other ones. I'm sorry. There's the people who think Octavarium is the best, and then there are people who are wrong. So, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that position before. For me, it's weird because I just can't get into that album, yet everyone talks about it as, like, just this amazing album. I'm sure it is, don't get me wrong. But for me, it just doesn't tick as many boxes as Awake does.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all really, really, we all know the Astonishing is the right answer. I mean,
that I think we can all agree on.
Astonishing. I'll say this. I don't know if people in the Dream Theater fan club will hear this and be angry, but I think that they probably just need a break. Like, not like just to relax and just to not feel forced to put out an album every year. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Just take a break and, like, spend time with your family, come back refreshed with your ideas where you don't feel like you have to keep throwing things into the pot. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that's what it's been for the past couple albums.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why Portnoy originally left, because they were on the Right Record tour cycle for 20-odd years, and he was burnt out. And he went to them and said, hey, can we just take a bit of a break? And they said, no, we're not going to do that. Yeah. So that's basically how it all happened.
Probably should have done that.
Seeing Portnoy at the Shattered Fortress show that he did in Sydney realize that that was a phenomenal show, and it made me realize how much I miss Portnoy behind the kit.
100%, man. When I went to that show, I realized that the band, who was 90% Haken, mm-hmm. was more Dream Theater than what Dream Theater is. There was so much emotion and
integrity.
There was so much integrity and genuineness in what was on stage there. And I just thought, when I saw Dream Theater when I see them last, 2009, like, I was still a big fan. But like, what seeing the Shadow Fortress thing just was so much more refreshing. Like, it was actually, it was weird.
Hey, Dave, did you see Dream Theater when they came out recently?
Yeah, I've seen them every time they've been here.
What did you reckon about that last show?
It was awesome to see Images and Words in its full.
That would be cool, actually.
It was actually, and they did A Change of Seasons as well, which was phenomenal. They were obviously very tired. I mean, LaBrie was not sounding particularly good, and they were actually tuning down either a half step or a full step.
They're taking after your favorite band, Metallica.
Yeah, indeed, they have. So I thought it was good.
Again, like, I think you're right about the bit being tired. Like, I just felt they were tired, and you can kind of, I don't know, I feel like that tired feeling kind of translates to their last three albums anyway. You know what I mean? Just like an all-round tiredness.
Yeah, I think there's a big thing about the last show, that the last tour that they did. I mean, we missed them on the Astonishing tour. They didn't bring it here, which I was really pissed off about, because when I wrote the album review for that, I said that it sort of felt like there was stuff that was missing. It felt like listening to an album that is of a musical. So say you were listening to the music of the Book of Mormon.
Oh, yeah.
Without actually seeing the rest of the stage show.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha. Right?
And I don't know if you guys have seen the Book of Mormon, but I won't spoil it for anyone. That's what the last Dream Theater album felt like to me, was just listening to the album without actually knowing how it all went. Actually, it seemed like there were bits missing. And for a 36-track album or 34-track album or whatever it was, I mean, there were like seven good tracks. And there was one track, I can't
remember, being generous.
Well, for me, I mean, there were some really, really standout tracks. There was one I can't remember the name of it, but as I've listened to it that many times, you can tell. And it started off amazingly, and I was just like, okay, this is going to be really cool. This is like a hark back to like Images and Words, probably Wooden Dream and Day Unite kind of thing. This is really interesting. Then it just went into this Disney fucking weird thing, and I was just going, what in the hell, you know, like but I think it says a lot in their last tour here in Australia that they played two songs off the new album.
Pretty much while we're talking about them, the fact is we haven't forgotten about them. Like,
not at all.
Like, we know the value that band, you know, what they mean to us individually and what they mean to the scene. And it's mostly thinking about people coming, you know, into prog now, and just their first experience of Dream Theater is what they're putting out. It's like, no, you don't understand this band. Like, there's so much more. There's so much more here that you don't realize. And I guess, like, that's why I kind of want them to, like, just have a break and come back and slay our ears again.
Well, that's it, man. Like, I want Dream Theater to be a good band again. I want to hear Awake again.
Yeah, sure.
Not that I necessarily want them to, you know, just release the same album, but if I want another album that kicks my ass like Awake does.
Because we know they can.
Well, that's it. They're totally capable of it.
They're better musicians now than they were.
Well, that's exactly right.
And I think they've really... And as much as I love Mangini and I love his drumming, and I actually think he's actually technically a better drummer than Portnoy, he's a nutcase.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that dynamic thing that Portnoy had going on.
Right.
In my opinion. And it's really, especially when they do, I mean, they say they don't trigger the drums and all that sort of stuff, and maybe they don't, but his drum sounds terrible.
It could just be a victim of, like, music production and trying to make sure everything's perfect as possible and all that sort of stuff. It may not even be up to him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, that very well may be the case as well. Very well may be the case.
Yeah.
So,
Cool, man.
Yeah,
that's
so
pretty much the dream theater. Everyone's at the computer. Yeah.
So yeah, but look, I think that's a really good spot to wrap things up for today.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Thank you guys so much for joining me on the podcast and filling in Hoggy's shoes. Now, you guys are actually playing this coming weekend with Mercury Sky Seams and Steel Swarm. And you guys are playing at the Ballface Stag. Doors open 7:30. 345 Parramatta Road there in Leichhardt. It's definitely worth it to go down and see these guys and Mercury Sky as well.
I've been following Mercury Sky for years. Like before we got to know them personally, I was a massive fan of theirs. Mm. And I think getting to know those guys, I think the first place I saw them might have been the Baldface Stag. So right. It's interesting. I mean, we've played with them a couple times at the Baldface Stags, which is kind of cool. Mm. But yeah, always good to. You know, for us personally, one of the metrics that I personally use to sort of measure, I don't want to say success, but like measure how well I'm doing is the bands that I used to be a fan of, I am now friends with.
Yes. So, that's a good one, actually.
But it's one of those grounding things, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, a couple of years ago, I used to listen to the CD and go check them out live. And now fast forward a few years and they've asked us to play with them. So it's, you know, and it's been like that with a few bands. So it's actually really cool.
Absolutely. If you are hearing this before this gig happens, definitely head down, check these guys out. Look out for their new album, Synosia, which will be out later this year, I believe. And check these guys out on Bandcamp. We'll put all the links in the show notes. As always, as we tend to do here on the 9-8 podcast. And just one final question for you guys before we go. This is a question I always like to ask people when I do a slight interview or a chat with them. Guys, tell us something we don't know.
Yeah, I really – that's a strange question.
Let's say something's personal. It doesn't have to be music-related, right?
Yeah, it could be anything.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, I don't know. I love to cook.
Like,
I actually enjoy cooking. I think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, like actually doing stuff with with your hands and making something out of nothing. It's almost similar to music in some weird way, right? Like, you know,
taking these raw ingredients.
Yeah, things that were nothing by themselves and coming together and you through a process, some weird alchemic process, and becoming something, you know, different completely, like transmutated. And that's really philosophical, but you know that's what you know what I'm getting at, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's nice. De-stresses me. I'm a meditator. Mm-hmm. I do like to meditate.
Perfect. All right. Well, look, thank you again so much, guys, for joining me this week on the 9-8 podcast.
No worries.
Yeah, thanks for filling Hoggy's shoes until he gets back next week.
Do you think we did a better job than he could have ever done?
I think he's going to be looking for a new job. That's what it is. Doing.
Just sent you your resume.
No, look, thank you again so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat this morning of all things prog, and of course everyone else who's listening here. Thank you very much for tuning in wherever you are in the world. This is the 9-8 podcast. My name is David Ellis. I've been joined with the guys from Genetics this week. Thanks, and we'll see you again soon.
All right, thanks, man.